Welcome back to Token Intelligence. John, I have been thinking a lot about...
You almost said the name of our other show, I think.
I almost did. Our previous show. Yeah. Well, it was 5 years.
It was
so
5 years.
I said that many times, yeah, hundreds of times. I've been thinking a lot about hype around AI employees.
Yep.
And I saw a post on X that I think exemplifies this really well. And it's from the founder of Sentry, David Cramer, you know, who's a really interesting guy and who has great thoughts on a lot of different things. So I'll just read this. I'll just read this. He's quoting another tweet, that says nobody's running 20 agents overnight and building stuff for actual users. So David Cramer comments on this and says, everyone is slowly coming to this realization, and I assure you, no one is running multitudes of agents overnight, no one that is doing anything of substance, at least. There are people pretending to be scientists or fully caught up in their drug-infused AI overdose that think their slop machines are changing the world. They're not, though, and they're just wasting a bunch of money and compute to create a lot of lines of code that will just get thrown away. The state of the art is still, can we even one-shot a production-quality patch that we won't regret later? And it's rarer than you'd expect based on discourse. So this is interesting because I think the news cycle around, you know, layoffs especially, you know, so there was a huge layoff at Block, you know, which is a big financial company, you know, that does Square and... you know, Cash App and other, you know, other financial services. You know, they let off thousands of employees, and that's been in the news cycle a bunch, right? And so one of the headlines consistently is, you know, AI is replacing these employees. Yeah. And so then in the software world, like David Cramer said, you have people who are saying, I'm running 20 agents overnight to, you know, accomplish all of this work. And I have seen multiple posts like this where people say, okay, I mean, you're building something, but that's not actually a legitimate cycle in which production level work
right.
or real, you know, user, like user facing products are being generated that way.
Right.
And you came to mind as every time I read these posts, you come to mind because right. you have tried to create and have created AI employees, you know, or an autonomous fleet of agents for your business. And I wanted to ask you whether you think David Cramer is correct.
I think he's mostly right. Because I wouldn't say it's been hundreds, but we've done dozens of like internal app experiments of... okay, like what if we could automate this thing?
Yep.
Like we do a lot of data engineering. So like a bunch of reps are like, all right, data engineering. And all of them have essentially stayed internal. We don't have any of these like autonomous agents like working on client projects.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what do they do? So give me an example. Describe one of your autonomous AI employees.
So
do you even call it that internally? Or so did you call it that and you don't call it that anymore?
So I think there's like three different levels here. Like one is what works at home personally for people. One,
right.
what works at work personally for people. Two, and then three, what works with a team at work.
Mm.
So it's like personal me, like for fun at home. Personal,
yep.
me at work, productivity, which, and then layer on some like security and some pieces there. And then like what works with a team at work.
Yep. Let's give examples of each of those because, and I'll just frame it in terms of tooling.
Yeah.
So what works for me at home, there are three things that come to mind. So on the technically advanced end of the spectrum, you have OpenClaw.
Right.
So you rent it on a Mac Mini.
Yep.
You give it access to your text messages, your email, your calendar, everything, and it becomes, you know, a personal assistant,
right?
And can do all these things for you. Mm-hmm. And people who go crazy, you know, will have it trade on Poly Market
yeah.
and give it their credit card.
Yeah.
Zoe Computer, I would say, is sort of middle ground.
Okay.
So it's AI running in a secure cloud computer. So you can kind of think about it as OpenClaw with the guardrails that you would want, right?
Right.
So it's running AI, but it's in a completely secure environment. I mean, you can give it access to certain things, but it's not nearly as, you know, sort of on the risk end of the spectrum as something like OpenClaw. And because it's an actual computer, it, you know, you can have host files on it and do all sorts of things, right? So way more powerful to actually have a computer. And then there's this other tool that's a consumer, like a full consumer product, not necessarily like prosumer, like a Zoe or a OpenClaw, that's called Poke. And they don't even have an interface.
Okay.
You just use iMessage, Telegram, whatever. You just use a messaging service.
Right.
And that's the only interface. And it will just do things for you. So you just text this agent all day.
Nice.
And it can do all these different things. Like, you know, you can connect stuff, right? Yeah. So they're sort of the same idea, right? So that's personal.
Yep.
Using things individually at work is on the advanced technical end of the spectrum. You're using Cloud Code to like generate code or do a project or whatever.
Right.
You know, and then you have something like Cloud Desktop or GPT, you know, where you can generate artifacts, you can like, you know, let it read physical files, you can upload things, you can give it access to Google Drive and it can help you with a spreadsheet, right? And so that's just using it for productivity, right? And then at work on a team. So this is an area where I don't think a lot of people outside of those who are working, you know, in AI every day understand what the tool set even is. So how do you even think about this? Because I think most people are familiar with, I use AI personally at work.
Right. So yeah, I think it'd be helpful just to go personally. So personally, I've played around a fair amount with and been able to do some cool things with OpenClaw, Obsidian, which is a note app similar to Notion, and GPT-5.4, now GPT-5.5. Like, it's really cool. And that is something that, this is silly, but the most productive, like, enjoyable thing that it does is on a schedule multiple times a day, it filters out advertisements from my personal email. That's what it does. And it's great.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome. And it's
I have a lot of thoughts on that. Over like a month.
And over like a month.
Sure.
Like, it's several hours of savings.
Mm-hmm.
And no email provider that gets revenue from ads will ever build that in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a legitimate long-term use case, unless the model changes for email.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that, I mean, that is the like single most useful thing.
That's a whole episode that we should discuss,
anyways. And then there's plenty of other like small things, but the use case and like to drill into like what's actually happening there, it's like a really, highly refined, lots of iterations prompt that's run on a schedule multiple times a day, which is really useful. And I slightly modify it over time. So like if I know, because there's general like, it's like decent at like separating ads versus not, but it's not perfect. So I've gotten better at working with it. So I'll tell it like, hey, I'm working with my buddy Blake on a thing. Like, just don't like make sure that Blake's emails don't get like lost.
Yeah.
And like you can proactively tell it. And then it's just like little things like that where it's like, it's not going to know if that's spam or not. Like it might, you know.
Sure.
Or I signed up for this new service. Like I know that like it might look like spam, but I'm expecting that it's going to email me.
Right.
Or I like actually
use. I do want these updates on the or product like a blog newsletter or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the important piece there is the get it like 90% and then iterate with it over time.
Yep.
And that's like true for anything. And then the next important piece is, what can I do personally that could happen every day that would be super valuable? And it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's then work, like a couple of things. Yeah. One, you have to layer on security. Two, for us, like kind of client preference. Which we've talked about before, as far as some people really want to use this model versus the other.
Yep.
But I think the motion is similar. You're just, like you said, you're just making spreadsheets or like,
sure,
whatever.
Yep. You're leveraging AI to perform activities that you performed before, but you're doing them faster, more comprehensively, whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, faster and slightly worse, right? but sometimes that's like, it doesn't matter.
But okay. Still, yeah, you're just augmenting your existing workflow.
Yeah. So the Teams thing I think is the most interesting. Because I think it's the part people have the least figured out. So for me, like the way I'm thinking about Teams is you have to move the work into a space the team already like uses, which so far is chat, which practically means Slack or Microsoft Teams, depending on your organization.
Yep.
So you have to move the work there, especially if you're going to get non-technical people involved. They're not going to log into another thing. Like if maybe, and especially if they're not using like AI tools like much for productivity, you have to get into the chat interface.
Right. Cause that's an adoption.
Yeah. So there's that, but then there's the, like, how do you use it in public? Because
in public within a company.
How do you use it in public within a company? And the answer is channels or groups, because that's the only way to show people in a like really low risk, I don't know, like a really easy way to get it to do something, because people either don't know that it can do things or they like feel like they don't know how or they're nervous or whatever.
Interesting.
Especially non-technical people. Which I don't have that many in my organization, non-technical people.
Right.
But that to me, I think at least for now is the right play. And natively in Claude, like chats between other people in group chat, like doesn't even really exist. And it kind of exists in ChatGPT, but like kind of.
Yep.
I've done a couple. I don't know if you've ever done one. You can do group chats now with humans and AI and GPT, but at work, I don't think too many people use it for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah. So, okay, that is really interesting because you're framing this in part as an adoption problem.
Right.
So even if we assume that you could run 20 agents overnight and have, you know, these digital employees like doing things on your behalf.
Right.
You know, getting a company to adopt that is actually hard.
Well, yeah. It is, but it's not. But the reason the adoption problem is hard is the like value. Like I don't know what it can do reliably.
Okay.
They can theoretically know, like, oh, I hear it can connect to things and do neat things, but like, what can it actually do?
Right. You know? Right. Is that, would you describe that as a blank page problem?
No, it's not like completely blank, but it's like there's like enough filled in. It's like a Mad Lib problem. And you have like a group of people that's like kind of good at Mad Lib and a group that's kind of bad at Mad Lib. That's how I think about it.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. So, where's the point of diminishing return that you have found, right? So, and I'll frame this as a theoretical use case. Right. You probably have already tried to implement this. Okay. You try to build a data analyst agent for a company.
Yes.
Okay. So this is a digital employee, autonomous agent, whatever term you want to use. But it is a machine that performs the job of what a typical analyst would do.
Right.
And so this can show up in many forms. Just a couple that, you know, come to mind out of the gate are you can have it like run a report on a schedule, right? So I can get my weekly sales report, right?
Right.
You can ask it ad hoc questions, right? So, you know, website traffic looks like it's down this week. You know, what are the potential reasons that it's down? Like, what are the variables that changed and impacted, you know, the delta the most? You could have it perform, you know, analyses like forecasting or other things like that, right?
Yep.
Is that, you know, again, based on sort of what David Kramer said in the post, people who are, you know, people are saying this is, you know, and like the layoff news and all that sort of stuff, right? What do you think in your experience is the actual state of that? Yep. Is there huge adoption? Is that providing value? Is it replacing a data analyst as an employee?
Yeah. So I think two interesting things. One, on the data analyst thing, and we were talking about this earlier. A lot of the experimentation we've done has been internal and like, hey, I wonder if we can make a data analyst. Mm-hmm. And it's like, does anyone have time to work on this? No. So like we'll have like I think I did a demo of this like for a group that we're part of. So like we'll go find the craziest thing. Like there's these zero employee companies that like there's two or three of them out there mm-hmm. that are like we're a zero employee company all run by AI. I was mm-hmm. like, fine, we'll try that. And like give it an objective, like, hey, we want this cool AI data analyst, and then give it like a bunch of tokens mm-hmm. and be like, hey, build the thing.
Yep.
So I think that's
You've done this.
Yeah, we've done this. Yeah. Yep. One extreme vector, and it like is exactly what you would expect. Well, I don't know what you would expect. Like it kind of works. Like it's like it like you learn some cool things. You're like, oh, that's interesting. It did that. And then like you start it up and like, of course it doesn't work right the first time. And then like, I couldn't tell you like the exact like time frame between that and like hardening to make it like something really good.
Right.
Or if I would just want to start over. Cause we haven't like quite done that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you two questions. Two questions come to mind. In the current state with what you've tried, is the juice worth the squeeze?
On which piece?
On, you know, running a zero, zero employee data right. team or something.
Yeah.
Right? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Like you're not deploying this to all of your clients.
No.
And it sounds like the way that you talk about it is you say it kind of works, which means that you're running it internally, but you're not, you know,
right.
doing this in production right. on behalf of a client.
Here's how I think about it. And this is a shortcoming of like the design of a lot of the tools.
Okay.
Don't think it's a fundamental model problem. And I had a chance to like describe this to like somebody on my team recently, you know, so helpful for me to frame it. And I was like, all right, think about like all the tokens you spend in a week.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with them?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's categorize it. Writing code. All right. What percentage of the time?
Mm-hmm.
Research. What mm-hmm. percentage of the time? Planning. Mm-hmm. What percentage of the time? QA and quality. What percentage of the time? I think that is one of the current fundamental problems, is the misallocation, especially for technical people, of way too high a budget for writing code, way too low a budget for planning, way too low a budget for research, way too low a budget for quality.
Interesting.
So if you like inverted that and you're like, hey, token maxer, you have a token budget that's unlimited, but every day or every week, here's your breakdown. You need to spend
yes.
X amount of your budget on yep. research, X amount on planning, X amount on quality, and the remainder you can spend on coding.
Interesting.
I think that would fundamentally change a
yeah.
lot of like how
yeah,
people
yeah.
like use.
Yeah.
And I think the results would be better.
I guess what I'm getting at is it sounds like you have not reached a point where you're super excited about these autonomous digital data analysts suddenly providing some unbelievable amount of value based on your implementations of them, but you
right.
also view it as a problem that will be solved in the near future.
I think a lot of the tooling and everything that's being pushed right now is very developer-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And in the real world, like what we've developed over time is all these different roles like ops, DevOps, security, you know, QA at different points. I feel like QA mm-hmm. comes and goes as far as like fads.
Yep.
And we're just really lopsided right now.
Mm.
So when I go to use like to try out like an autonomous, like orchestrated zero person company, who made that? QA people, ops people,
right?
Or devs? Devs. Of
yeah.
course.
Yeah.
They're not, or database people. They're not,
right.
They're not data people, mate. Like they're devs.
Yeah.
And like, there's just a bent that's like built into the framework and the software of if I want to emphasize token spend on like, and you could absolutely do it, but there's like a pre-bent to building
mm-hmm.
whereas like you need extra like work and thought to like kind of force it to do like, oh, you need to do more planning, more QA, more research, like. And you can do it because most of these frameworks
yep.
are fairly flexible. But if you just want out of the box, like do something cool, like it's got that dev bent to it. Like it's
yep.
hard to explain
yep.
any other way.
Yeah.
And that would be the case. That would be the case regardless of AI. If there's some like new thing and it's like brand new and devs built it and you don't have the other layers that would be in a commercial organization of quality and ops and all the other
mm-hmm.
things, like I think you'd run into the same problems but AI like exaggerates the problem.
Mm. It's super interesting. One of the other things that comes to mind is the challenge around, we talked about the, you know, sort of the blank page problem, or the Mad Lib problem, as you framed it, which I think is great. But I think the other difficulty is that the, if you think about a data analyst within a company, you know, let's say you build it, you know, we've seen these things actually be successful where you have a little data agent in Slack and you can, or to Microsoft Teams, and you can ask it questions, and it's super helpful. Yeah. It's like, it's very, you know, what's the daily active user trend for the last 3 months or something, right? And it's just like amazing to get those answers, you know, on demand. But another thing that I've noticed is that, you know, people will say, well, you know, those sorts of things are not necessarily accurate all the time. But I think it's because they are set up, even with a semantic layer and really clear definitions, that only covers a certain amount of surface area on the data that's, you know, of the data and the questions that can be asked. But because it's an open-ended Mad Libs problem, people can ask questions and the agent will try to answer those questions.
Yeah.
But, you know, by default, it tries to answer the questions.
Yeah.
And so I think that's another challenge where you do have to, even though agents can, you know, technically reason autonomously, you actually do have to bake the guardrails in to control for the fact that they will try to answer by default, even if they don't have, you know, the underlying context that they need to answer the question, which is challenging. And I think that's another limitation of, you know, whether it's a coding agent, it will try to build the feature, A data analyst will try to answer the question. It's actually a lot of work to hard code the guardrails in that, that keep it from doing things that it shouldn't do.
Yeah. Well, so if we talk about data analyst, I'm very bullish and I think we're there on the data part, but not on the analyst part.
Yes.
So if you have a really good analyst that like basically just needs text to SQL, like we're there. It works great. And they, if they have domain knowledge and understanding of the data and they just like, they wouldn't be able to write SQL very fast or maybe at all. And like, they just have like some intuition, like that works great. Like today,
but that's a fundamentally, that is fundamentally different because that is augmenting an existing human role, which is fundamentally different than a zero person company or, an autonomous employee.
So let me end on this. Cause as far as like where I think we're going, one, I think autonomous employee like skips step. I mean, autonomous like zero person company skips a bunch of steps.
Yes.
The thing that's most interesting to me right now is the, if you've heard of like digital twin, like basically working on a digital employee is what people are calling it, but it's like, who's responsible for the employee. I think the best model right now is one-to-one and saying like, all right, I'm going to like be constructing this thing. And like all of my, and there's like basic framework stuff that like is going to be solved. It's like already being solved by model, by GPT and Anthropic and all of these. And then like all the effort goes into the guardrails and the prompting and the like baking in the knowledge. So the interactions with it are like easy.
Yes.
Like that, that to me is the next step. And if it says something dumb, like it's my co, like co is the, like is the term a lot of people are using. It's my co and I'm like responsible for fixing it. That to me is the most compelling model.
And it
has permission to do some things on my behalf. Like I have to prove important things. Like that. That is most interesting to me right now.
All right. So I'm going to summarize this.
All right.
We're not there yet, but we are getting there pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
All right. AI employees.
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Having young kids, that's a common
question.
Yes,
exactly. All right. Well, thanks for joining the Token Intelligence Show, and we'll catch you on the next one.